Hey, welcome back everyone to the channel. Tonight I have three horrifying deep woods stories, starting off down in Brazil in the Amazon rainforest, and then we have some crazy encounters which I believe may possibly be the Wendigo and possibly a skinwalker encounter. Stay tuned. If you're new to the channel, subscribe, click on that bell, and smash that thumbs up and tell a friend. Working in the jungles of the Amazon as a PMC, I saw many things. Villages with little to no technology. Giant snakes, beautiful, vibrant birds. Creatures I had never even heard of before. I worked with a team of biologists scouting a few kilometers of territory alongside the Amazon River. There was five of us. These four biologists knew what they were doing, and each had several expeditions under their names. I had gotten to know them for a few weeks as we researched. I was there as protection against tribes, poachers, or anything that could be thought of. They had reasons to hire me after all, and they were extremely experienced in this line of work and knew where they needed help. They hired me from Tungsten, a private military company based out of Louisiana. I grew up there, and after my time in the army, I joined Tungsten. This was my first job, and as a solo job, it was going to be a tough one. I met the team, four young biologists with Harvard degrees and dreams to discover new species. Tom, Brooke, Pete, and Freddie greeted me and briefed me as soon as we met up at the airport in Brazil. They shook my hand and eagerly explained what findings they hoped to achieve. This was their second expedition to the Amazon as a team of four, and for Tom, it was his fifth to the Amazon in total. We landed on a dirt runway, aboard a converted C-47. The locals seemed interested in my modified rifle, with a laser, red dot sight, and suppressor. A truck shortly arrived to pick us up, and we sat in the bed for a two-hour ride, which ended on a curve on the road in the beginning of the forest. We got out, thanked the driver with a generous tip, and headed off. I had no idea what was going on, so I just followed them. They excitedly made their way into the jungle, pointing out species of trees and insects as we made our way through the dense foliage. The top of the rainforest covered most of the ground in dark shadows, leaving it looking like it was midnight for months at a time. We made our way to a small clearing, and with a few slashes of a machete, the small bushes and sprouts were cut down, leaving room for our tents. Brooke and Pete shared a tent, while Freddie and Tom used net-covered hammocks. I used one as well, as the thought of a giant centipede crawling up my leg made me shudder. I kept a small Wather 22 at my waist in case of such. As night fell and we grew tired, a large feeling of dread crept over me, like I was being watched by something that didn't really want me there. I had heard about explorers being torn apart by wild animals, so I sat up, chambered around into my rifle, and waited. "Wake up, man. I've got breakfast for you." I jolted awake, gripping my rifle, only to see Pete offering me a few strips of bacon. "Didn't mean to scare you. That's my bad, man. But here's some bacon. It's not the best, but it's what we got." I took the few strips I was handed, wolfed them down. I gave him a thank you for the breakfast before standing up to take a piss. I walked about 5 yards from the camp and stared out into the jungle. My eyes were still blurred from sleep, but as they focused, I saw someone, something that gave me chills. It was a disembodied face, with spikes rising from the top of its head, a wicked grin, raised eyebrows, and squinting eyes. Its face was spherical in shape, and was lined by a thick mane of dirt fur. I blinked, and it turned around and barreled away. It had to have been at least 8 feet tall, with its muscled body covered in mud and wounds. I took a few steps into camp when I met the others. "I swear I just saw some giant thing. It was tall with horns with a messed up smile. What?" "Whoa, man, calm down, breathe," said Tom. When you're up in the jungle, you see things. You get used to them, but sometimes they aren't friendly. Why do you think you're here? The rest nodded in agreement. I stood there in disbelief. There's no way that they were so accepting of the fact that a frickin' monster out of a horror movie was stalking us, and that I was supposed to be cool with that too? How are you guys okay with this? I'm just one guy. What if it gets me? Then who will protect you? I shouted at them. Oh, don't worry, that won't happen, Tom said with a smile. As the day went on, the group left in pairs, telling me to stay with the other two that remained at the camp. I kept my rifle on fire at all times. I was scared crapless at that monster that had lurked in the jungle. As night began to fall for the second day, I crawled into my hammock with my rifle at my lap, and I kept a cup to piss in just in case if I had to go. I wasn't getting out in the middle of the night. As I started to get drowsy, I heard what sounded like whispering. I peeked out the side to see the group of four standing around the fire, holding hands, whispering. Things weren't seeming so normal anymore, not that they had for the entirety of this ordeal. As I sat there wondering what to do, I started to lose consciousness. When I awoke, I was near a creek bed as the four stood over me, all smiling just like the monster. My arms and legs were tied down, and Tom wielded a knife. They had cut my shirt off, and I could only assume ready to carve something into me and do what sick crap they had planned. But they failed to tie my left hand as tight as my right, and fortunately for me, they didn't notice my pistol in my waist. A plan came to my mind, and all I had to do was wait. You sick turds, you're gonna kill me for what? I yelled. Well, you've already seen Kaistika. Just know that your sacrifice will be very welcomed by him, and we are pleased to deliver your heart to him. In fact... Shut up with the cheesy lines, Tom, just get it over with, I interrupted. Well, if you say so, the four said at once. They began to pray in unison, words I could not understand, as Tom raised his knife. As he looked up at the knife, holding it with both hands, I reached for my pistol and fired. He fell to the ground holding his neck, blood spraying out. I opened fire on the other three, firing wildly at them. 22 isn't like a 5.56 holster points I had loaded in my rifle, so I put as many rounds into them as I could. Pete fell down holding his chest, while Freddy stumbled into the bushes behind him. Brooke tried to find the knife, but I loaded another magazine and dispatched her. I aimed at Freddy, fueled by rage, and pulled the trigger. I felt unexpectedly good at that moment, and the jungle fell silent for the first time since I had arrived. I caught my breath and made my way up to the small incline to the camp. We weren't far off the road, so I knew it wouldn't be a long walk. I grabbed my radio and my rifle and set off. As I neared the road, I heard loud thumps behind me, and I started running, knowing that the beast was coming. Before I knew it, it reached me and knocked me on my ass. I turned around to try to fire at it, but my shots missed as it grabbed my leg and thundered back into the jungle, dragging me along. After what seemed like miles, it threw me against a tree. As I stared up at the jungle ceiling, I saw light peeking through, realizing that the sun was rising. My vision blurred, and I heard its manic breathing and grunts as it slammed its fist into my chest several times. I laid there unable to move as I watched it despair back into the jungle. Soon, I felt insects crawling over me, even the centipedes I was so fearful of. Sometimes they took a bite, running away when I screamed in pain. As night began to set in, I heard footsteps. I looked out of the corner of my eye. I saw Brazilian soldiers coming to me with water. Now, as I sit in my wheelchair at my home in an undisclosed location, I see the Kaistika sometimes. I'll see him in my dreams, out of the fields, or sometimes in my home. Never moving, only staring, whispering. He says the same chants the four biologists whispered as they prepared to kill me. Maybe, after I recover, I'll head back. And maybe I'll bring a few friends to give to Kazdika. Hello, I'm Mark, and last summer I had a terrible experience. I'm a student at a small liberal arts college. I am part of a film club, and decided to spend my summer break making a movie with students of my club, also friends of mine. We have rented a cabin in the woods, far from any civilization, to use as our base of operations. So we pack our things and get ready for a road trip, I suppose. Are we there yet? Ashley asked, sounding bored. No, not yet, I replied, trying to hide my own impatience. It's going to be another hour or so before we reach the cabin. This is taking forever, Alexander said, stretching his legs. I can't wait to get out of this car and start exploring. Me too, Mary agreed. I'm so excited to start filming for our movie. It's going to be epic. I hope so, I said, feeling a surge of excitement. This is our chance to make something really special. And it's going to be so much fun, Ashley added. We're going to have the best time ever in the woods. We continued the chat and joke as we drove deeper into the wilderness, eager to reach our destination and start our adventure. I miss all of this, our joy to explore the forest. I wish this didn't happen to us. Eventually, we made it. I swung open the trunk and grabbed the two duffel bags of our equipment. I believe it was tripods and stuff. Come on, grab some of the stuff and let's get inside, I yelled, smiling. And they did just that, grabbing some bags too. When we entered, the place looked just as expected. The cabin was small but cozy, with wooden walls and a thatched roof. It had the one main room that served as a living area, kitchen, and bedroom. There was also a small loft upstairs where we could sleep. In the center of the room was a fireplace, where we could all keep warm on cold nights. The windows were covered with curtains, and the furniture was old but comfortable. Despite its rustic appearance, the cabin had all the amenities we needed, including a gas stove, running water, and electricity. We had stocked up on supplies before arriving, so we had everything that we needed to make our stay comfortable. Overall, the cabin was the perfect base of operations for our movie-making adventure. We were excited to spend the next 2 weeks there, exploring the surrounding wilderness and creating our masterpiece. Wow, this place is amazing, Mary said, looking around the cabin. I can't believe we have it all to ourselves for the next 2 weeks. It's perfect, Ashley agreed, setting down her bags. We have everything we need here to make our movie. And it's so cozy, Alexander said, staring at the fireplace. I can't wait to relax and unwind after all the driving. Me too, I said, feeling a sense of contentment. This is exactly what we needed. I know, right? Mary said, smiling. We're going to have the best time here. We spent the rest of the day unpacking and setting up our equipment. Okay, let's set up the cameras here, I said, pointing to a spot in the corner of the room. It'll give us a good view of the whole cabin. And we can set up the lights over here, Alexander said, carrying a tripod over to the opposite corner. It'll help to get us the right lighting for our scenes. And we can put the microphones on these stands, Mary said, setting up two stands near the center of the room. It'll help us capture the audio for our dialogue. This is going to be great, Ashley said, smiling. I can't wait to start filming. Ashley is a very cheerful and kind person. I'm glad she was my friend before this stuff happened. We made sure that everything was in place and ready to go. We were excited to start our movie-making adventure, and we couldn't wait to see what we would create. Except strange things start to happen. We hear eerie noises outside the cabin, and when we look out the windows, we see something moving in the darkness. At first, we brush it off as our imaginations getting the better of us. But the next morning, we find strange footprints outside the cabin, and some of our equipment is damaged. Okay, I'm sure there's a logical explanation for this, I say, feeling a bit stressed. Mary scuffs and says, "Yeah, logical my butt. What are even those tracks we saw? I swear, we're leaving tomorrow, that's that." Alexander follows up. "Mark, we could do the movie somewhere else. Let's pack up and go." Ashley only nods, not speaking. "Fine, okay, let's just go then," I said, signing. "The movie won't be as cool now, but our safety is more important." Tomorrow arrives and we pack up and leave. But as we are loading the car, the thing that has been stalking us reveals itself. It is a Wendigo, a mythological creature from Native American folklore. I actually know a lot about them from a video game, perhaps you guys know. The Wendigo is tall and gaunt, with pale skin stretching tight over its bones. Its eyes are glowing red orbs, and its mouth is filled with sharp, jagged teeth. We are frozen with fear as the Wendigo approaches us. But we know that we have to do something if we want to survive. So we run away. We ran to the cabin. I make it in first. Ashley, Alexander, and Mary follow.
"The hell is that thing?"
Alexander asked, his voice shaking with fear, bracing the door.
"I think it's a Wendigo, man,"
I replied, trying to keep my own fear in check.
What are we going to do?
"We have to get out of here," Ashley said, grabbing her backpack. "Whatever that thing is, it's not stopping."
"But where are we going to go?"
Mary said, her eyes wide with fear.
"We're in the middle of nowhere, and that thing is outside with our car."
"Well, we'll figure it out. Damn it, Mary," I said, my voice breaking upon the pressure of our situation.
"I'm sorry. We just have to stay calm and think."
"Easier said than done," Alexander muttered, clutching his monopod. We heard the Wendigo again outside the cabin, banging against the door, and it was trying to get in, and it was only a matter of time before it succeeded. "Are you stupid? That thing isn't going to dent it," I said, voice filled with fear.
"We have to make a break for it."
I can't freaking do this," Mary said, tears streaming down her face.
"Mary, calm down," I said. "We have to outsmart it. Well, we'll have to try."
"Oh my God, we're gonna die," Mary said, her voice trembling.
"We can't fight that thing. It's too strong."
"We just have to make a run for it," I said, trying to sound calm. I definitely wasn't.
"If we don't, it's going to kill us."
"But we don't stand a chance. It's faster than us for sure," Ashley said, her eyes filled with tears. "It's going to rip us to pieces."
"We have to stay calm," Alexander said, his voice shaky. "If we panic, we're finished."
"But how do we stay calm?" Mary said, her voice breaking. "We're about to just run from a monster?"
"What else do we do? Fight it and die?"
I said, feeling my fear continuously rise.
"We have to run for our lives.
The Wendigo found one of the windows and broke through that, and we saw our opportunity." I took the car keys and shoved Alexander away from the door.
"Frickin' run, just run!"
We all made a break for it, but I suppose Ashley was too slow. It got a hold of her. I want to say we rushed in there to protect and save her, but we were all too scared and left her for dead. The Wendigo disappeared into the trees with her, leaving us behind to mourn her loss. We were devastated and terrified, knowing that the creature is still out there, hunting us. The three of us went to the car as quickly as we could.
Go, frickin' drive!"
Mary yelled at me. I reply frantically, fumbling with the keys.
"I'm trying! Don't yell at me, a-hole!"
I eventually get it in, and I twist the ignition onto it and immediately step onto the gas. Alexander is looking down at the ground, monopod still in his hand.
We just left her. We left Ashley.
I was focused on the road, but I could only assume Alexander was crying.
"Alex, I..." "Don't call me Alex. You got her killed. This freaking movie was your idea."
Alexander lashed out and starts shaking me. I swerved the car, but managed to keep it on the road. Alexander realized the dangers and stopped.
"Alexander," I said sadly.
We stay silent the rest of the way, immediately filing a missing persons report, as no one would believe us. Ashley never showed, and I could only assume she's dead.
The movie we were making is forgotten, replaced by the horrors of that night in the woods. Me and Alexander don't chat anymore. I did get Ashley killed. I wanted to make that movie, and I knew of the rumors of the monster lurking in the woods. It all started when I was out hiking in the mountains. I had always loved the solitude and the sense of adventure that came with being out in nature. But on this particular trip, I wasn't alone for long. I had been hiking for hours when I saw it, a strange figure in the distance. At first, I thought it was just a person, maybe another hiker or a park ranger. But as I got closer, I realized it wasn't a person at all. It was something else, something dark and sinister. The figure was tall and lean, with long, lanky limbs and a head that seemed too large for its own body. Its skin was mottled and gray, and it seemed to shimmer and change as it moved. I tried to run, but my legs wouldn't move. I was frozen in place, staring at the creature as it approached. And then it spoke to me.
"I'm a skinwalker,"
it said, its voice a low, guttural growl.
"I could take any form I desire, and now I have chosen yours."
I tried to scream, but no sound came out. The skinwalker reached out a hand and touched my face, and I felt a strange, creeping sensation all over my body. And then it happened. My skin started to crawl and shift, as if something was moving beneath me. I could feel my bones stretching and reforming my face, contorting into something unrecognizable. I was a skinwalker now, and just like the creature that had attacked me, and I knew that I would never be able to go back to my old life. I wandered the mountains for days, trying to find a way to reverse the transformation. But no matter what I tried, I couldn't shake the feeling that I was trapped inside this new alien body. As the days turned into weeks, I started to feel I was losing my grip on reality. The voices in my head grew louder, urging me to do things I knew were wrong, and the shadows that seemed to be everywhere, following me wherever I went. I knew that I couldn't keep running forever. Sooner or later, I would have to face the truth about what had happened to me. And so I made my way back to civilization, to the place where it all had started. I arrived in the small mountain town late at night, my body battered and bruised from my journey. I knew that I couldn't stay there long. I had to keep moving. But something about the place called to me, a faint memory of a life that I had left behind. I made my way to the only place that felt like home, the old cabin in the woods where I spent so many happy summers as a child. But as I approached, I saw that the cabin was no longer abandoned. There was lights on in the inside, and I could hear laughter and music coming from within. I hesitated, unsure of what to do. Part of me wanted to turn and run, to disappear into the shadows and never look back. But another part of me, a deeper, more primal part, was drawn to the warmth and the light of the cabin. I found myself moving closer, drawn in by the music and the laughter. And then I saw him. He was standing in the doorway, a tall, handsome man with piercing blue eyes and a broad smile. I knew him, or at least I thought I did. His name was David, and we had been friends as kids. I remembered spending long summer days with him at the cabin, swimming in the lake and exploring the woods. David's face lit up when he saw me. "Is that really you?" he exclaimed, a look of amazement on his face. I nodded, my heart racing. "It's me," I said, my voice barely above a whisper. David's smile faded a little as he took in my appearance. "What happened to you?" he asked, concern etched into his face. I shook my head, unable to find the words. "I don't know," I said. "I just changed." David looked at me for a long moment, and then he reached out and took my hand. "Come on," he said, his voice soft and gentle. "Let's go inside. We have a lot of catching up to do." I followed him into the cabin, into the light and the warmth. And for the first time in what felt like an eternity, I felt like maybe, just maybe, I was home. But as the night wore on, the voices in my head grew louder, more insistent. They were telling me to do things, things that I knew were wrong, in the shadows that seemed to be everywhere, following me wherever I went. I tried to ignore them, to focus on my conversation with David, but it was no use. The voices were too loud, too powerful. And then it happened. I couldn't control myself anymore. I grabbed a knife from the kitchen and turned on David, my old friend and the only person who had ever truly cared about me. I don't remember what happened after that. All I know is when I had woken up, David was lying on the floor in a pool of blood, and I was standing over him, the knife in my hand. I knew then that I could never go back, that I was doomed to wander the wilderness forever, a monster condemned to live in the shadows. And so I ran. I ran into the darkness and the cold, never looking back. I don't know how much longer I can keep running. The voices in my head are getting louder and louder, and the shadows seem to be following me wherever I go. I'm scared, and I don't know what to do. If you're reading this, please help me. I don't know who I am anymore, or what I've become. All I know is that I'm lost, and I need someone to guide me back to the light. I know I've done things, terrible things that I could never undo. But I'm not a monster. Not really. I'm just a lost, confused girl who made a terrible mistake. Please, if you see me, don't be afraid. I'm not going to hurt you. I want to find my way home, to get to the place where I belong. So if you see me, if you're out there and you know how to help me, please don't turn away. Reach out to me and show me the way back to the light. I don't know how much longer I can keep running, but I know that I don't want to do it alone.